Today marks 20 years since the start of Operation Iraqi Freedom. For our reporter who was on the Iraq-Kuwait border, the war started with a barrage of artillery fire. NPR's Eric Westervelt was embedded with the lead attack elements of the U.S. Army's 3rd Infantry Division.
I remember this, you know, sustained barrage, the thuds echoing.
Artillery?
Yeah, give me up.
And the U.S. officer I was with told his soldiers, you know, this is the start of liberation of Iraq.
Sound of freedom right there.
They were about to go into battle. Remember the context. The invasion started when the nation was still sort of traumatized by 9/11. And the nation was told, you know, look, this dictator, Saddam, he's hatching all these plots with chemical, biological, maybe even nuclear weapons. Of course, we now know that was, you know, a manufactured threat. Cheney, Rumsfeld, and others manipulated, cherry-picked, or completely manufactured intelligence to wildly exaggerate the threat.
My fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
NPR's Eric Westervelt joins us now. He has been embedded with the 3rd Infantry Division of the Army. Eric, can you tell us where you are, please?
I'm in southern Iraq, traveling with the U.S. Army's 2nd Combat Brigade of the 3rd Infantry Division. It's a mechanized...
Eric was one of three NPR reporters in Iraq at the time. John Burnett was traveling with the Marines, 1st Division, and Ann Garrels was one of the few Americans reporting in Baghdad during the U.S.-led bombing campaign. Meanwhile, Eric is in an armored convoy heading north towards the capital. He's in the back of a Bradley fighting vehicle, a fast-moving transport that rides on treads and provides cover fire.
On top of the buildings down there, they got fighting positions set up, fortified with sandbags, and there's a lot of towers down there.
In the beginning days, as they push north, the convoy hits resistance from Iraqi army and Fedayeen paramilitary forces.
The organized Iraqi military was totally overwhelmed. And the Iraqis were sort of unable to respond in any traditional military way. And they became to rely on, you know, Iraqi Saddam Fedayeen, sort of most loyalists. And they were using, you know, hit-and-run tactics, roadside bombs, stealth attacks, car bombs.
They've been sending some suicide bombers, cars packed with explosives, hurtling out of the side alleyways towards the convoy.
A week after the start of the invasion, the armored battalion is fighting to secure the Iraqi city of Najaf, considered sacred by Shia Muslims.
They were trying to get a group of Iraqis to surrender, so some PSYOPs, you know, intel team had come out with a translator and a bullhorn and said, you know, we want you to surrender, you're going to be treated well.
The U.S. forces get the Iraqi answer to the surrender plea in the form of rocket-propelled grenades and a heavy barrage of mortar fire. This is the sound of an RPG whizzing overhead before the tape goes blank as this reporter dives behind a Humvee.
After another battle south of Baghdad, the U.S. battalion commander lets families collect the bodies of Iraqi fighters killed in an overnight firefight.
Please, my children, please. Babies, please.
Grieving family members, widows, coming to retrieve their dead, putting them in the backs of trunks.
I remember the soldiers looking at that as well and realizing we did that. And one soldier said to the other ones, hey, guys, remember, a few hours ago, those same guys were trying to kill you.
You just can't get emotionally involved. Just gotta do your job and drive on.
By early April, U.S. forces close in on Iraq's capital. The 3rd Infantry Division, 2nd Brigade, charges towards what was then called Saddam Hussein International Airport.
This first push into Baghdad to the airport was really an intense, fast, violent, armored raid they called a Thunder Run up Highway 8. And you had Iraqis firing from rooftops, and garages with RPGs and with AK-47s.
Hey, Rook 6, we just got hit with an RPG.
The other really difficult part in this attack, Iraqi civilians were coming down the southbound lane, and some civilians were caught in the crossfire. You know, one of the most haunting memories I have is peering out the back of the Bradley, recording every moment I could, and seeing a car on fire that was filled with civilians. And a small child was standing outside the car, you know, just screaming in horror as he watched his parents die. And you had both sides firing a lot. And any civilians that were there were in just incredible and grave risk.
Everybody keeps saying it's for the oil. Not to mention this has been about no oil. The only thing is trying to bring a bad regime down and make people free again.
The U.S. seizes the airport, and a now famous scene unfolds in Baghdad. Iraqi civilians, with the help of U.S. Marines, topple a statue of Iraq's fallen dictator. Here's NPR's Ann Carrolls.
54-year-old Hasib Nouri, a taxi driver, tossed his shoes at a statue of Saddam, a deeply insulting gesture in the Arab world. "Thank you, America," he said, "for removing this dictator." But tearing down statues, as the Soviets once saw, is easy. Filling the vacuum will be much more difficult.
There was this momentary period of euphoria among Iraqis that you know, the dictator is gone. At the same time, you know, the Iraqi welcome was so short-lived.
NPR's John Burnett spoke with Iraqi civilians who initially supported the U.S.
Sabah Salim Hussein is a 45-year-old Jowli bookseller in Sadr City.
I brought one of my relatives a picture of President Bush to post on the wall of his house. He claimed that Bush helped get rid of Saddam. Now, I swear it, every day he stomps on the picture of Bush with his shoes because he has lost two sons. And during Saddam's time, he lost nothing.
While the initial invasion and overthrow of Saddam was briefly considered a success, I mean, the occupation was horrifically mismanaged. It unleashed years of bloody sectarian civil war and trauma, and later it helped give rise to more terrorists with the rise of ISIS, who for a brief period controlled large parts of Iraq and Syria. But we at that point didn't fully realize that this was just the start of Iraq's long nightmare.
NPR's Eric Westervelt, reflecting on the start of the U.S. invasion of Iraq 20 years ago. The story was produced by our colleagues on NPR One.